Hey, everybody. Welcome to Flip Gorilla podcast and brought to you by Maven Loans. Maven Loans is a hard money loan company here in Los Angeles. And we like to keep investors abreast of what's happening in the market. So we have asked a special guest to come back on to the podcast. His name's Tony Diaz with Invest. Well, you got a few different companies. Investnautic.
Invest SoCal. That's our acquisition.
SoCal. Yes. Invest SoCal. Tony's a good guy. He's got a, I'm getting a little bit of feedback again. He's a good guy. He's been investing for a long time. He's been through a lot of markets. And the reason why I wanted to get him on the show this time is that I talked to a lot of investors. All of them seem to be not as advanced in this new market as Tony seems to have positioned himself. And so, you know, some of my investors are still kind of like, well, I don't know, you know, but Tony's like, no, I've already made those moves, you know, 3-4 months ago. So I wanted to have, on Tony, because I wanted to kind of get your view. You flipped 1,000 properties. You have a team that's flipped tens of thousands of properties. But is it true that you kind of just started slowing down on the acquisitions in the last few months? And basically, you know, have you been buying in the last few months or you've slowed that down?
No, we stopped buying, Joe. You know, our first big crash was 08. And so that was extremely painful. So we took that learning curve and, you know, it's been a while since that happened. So a lot of things have changed. And then we went through the slowdown back in 2018, July, when the Feds raised the rate. And we made some pretty aggressive moves, not quite understanding. And obviously, you know, here comes COVID, right? So this is now my fourth major adjustment that I'm going through. And one of the things that we started doing is going back to the data and recognizing the patterns that we have seen before related to the showings and the offers and things like that. Obviously, it doesn't take a lot of experience to know that if your property was getting 30 offers and now you're getting 2 showings, that there's definitely a change in the market. So
yeah, right.
That piece wasn't necessarily our warning. We started seeing the signs before. You know, people have been talking about the market slowing down for almost 3 years. I know people, they stopped flipping 2-3 years ago because they thought that was the top of the market. So it's interesting. Everybody talks about inventory being really low, which it is. To me, I see a little bit of a different perspective when it comes to the affordability being an issue that was prior to even the rate hike. And essentially you took away the majority of the buyers. So regardless that we had very little inventory, we just have very, very little buyers that can actually afford.
Yeah, right.
Then you sprinkle all that without, and the consumer confidence, in my opinion, it's a big problem right now. But like everything, I still remember selling stuff through COVID and people would still buy, right in the middle of COVID. So those people are never going to stop, but there's just not enough of those buyers right now for us to continue to purchase, especially at the same prices that we were before. So we're definitely adjusting, pretty aggressively. And we seem to, every week, it seems to get more and more interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't follow the stock market like a lot of the financial guys do. I just look at what's really happening with us as the investors, how many offers we're getting and how that market is also being affected when we're making offers and we're starting to see sellers take a lot more realistic prices and also be more open to our price adjustments.
Yeah, so that rate hike was it was big. It was really big. You know, in regards to affordability, right? Like the payment on a 4% loan or 3.5% loan was, you know, now it's like 7 or 7.2% loan, and that increase is so much on a payment that, you know, if you can't afford it, then the price has to come down, right? And so, you know, we're lenders, right? So we've seen a big mix up in the markets, Tony, in the last like month and a half, I guess. A lot of guys stop buying notes. A lot of guys stop, big characters stop buying notes, stop funding deals. You know, scrounging around looking for money to keep everybody, you know, funded. Yesterday, a pretty good sized mortgage lender named Sprout came out on the wire that they had about 300 employees and were all told that they're laid off. And they supplied a good chunk of the DSCR type loans. And so, you know, if you're an investor, it's probably reminiscent of 2006, but it's not really 2006, right? I mean, but there's definitely an adjustment, right? So you saw the adjustment coming and you stopped buying. You're just kind of finishing the stuff that you have. And then you told me something about a month and a half ago. You said that the August was going to be an eye opener for the market. Are you? Can you talk about that August date?
Yeah. So you know, it's interesting to again data, right? I'm not following the stock market, like I said earlier. I'm just really following what's happening from a numbers perspective and really looking at a micro market approach where we have our listings and then we take it a higher level and then get a bit bigger picture. So. One of the things that we have is we have a full data deed mortgage and, you know, NODs and everything. So we're able to take in this information. Then we layer it across with, we cross-reference it with MLS data. And you start actually getting some really neat information. And when you start even looking at the how many showings are happening and how many, you know, the time on the market and things like that, but not looking at what happened in a month and a half ago or 2 months ago. I'm talking last week.
Right.
That's the data that I don't see very much of. You know, you see the mortgage data coming out and mortgage applications. Last time I saw was 80% down from previous year, which is a huge number.
Huge.
And it aligns with my thought process of the affordability issue on top of the cost of, you know, general living. We started seeing that data. And to me, the most important piece that that we're paying attention to is what type of depreciation can we continue to invest in? Mm-hmm. So the to me, call it the fallen knife concept, right? You got to catch it. You got to be careful. I'm not opposed to purchasing. To me, what I gather out of the data that was the most important thing is to understand the patterns of the depreciation, knowing that as an investor, I can get in and out of a flip in 30, 45 days for a basic paint, carpet, windows, just a you know, $70,000, $80,000 flip. Yeah. Be back in the market 30, 45 days and make sure that I'm understanding the actives. My comps are no longer the sales, but the pendings and making phone calls and understanding, getting information with that agent and seeing how many showings they're getting and being very conscious that you have to price your home, not the cheapest or the most improved, but the best value. So when you enter that market, you have to come in and sit there and say, you know, I drive all the comps. I look at myself from the eyes of the buyer and I said, if I'm the buyer, which is the best deal or where do I need to price myself to be the best deal?
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting, bro, because like usually we throw the pendings out of the comp, right? Like
right.
We look at active, closed, maybe even coming soon, but pending, you know, you kind of throw it out. But that's interesting because pending is right now, right? Like that's this exactly. Week, right? I got that. And do you follow up with like, is it smart to follow up with a call to the agent to kind of fish around to find out, you know, where did you come in? Like, did you get full
access? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We all know it, you know, technically they're not supposed to share information, yes. But you know, when you start talking, are you over, you're under, I mean, agents will share, yeah. You know, so they'll give you at least enough information for you to make an educated decision. But, my experience, Joe, and what I've been able to share with you and what I feel very confident is the now information and how I feel that when I started looking at the data, you still had some rate locks that were going to be able to extend until April. So you still continue to see those people desperate to get into the property to keep their, you know, 3.5 or whatever that first jump was. Mm-hmm. You lost all those rate locks. Everybody's buying now at the 6+ rate. The confidence piece, you know, you're hearing every other article saying that the market's going to go down. So, I mean, you got to have a buyer with a very strong need to make that purchase, right?
Yeah.
The other interesting perspective to pay attention to is, again, in big data, I listen to a bunch of people. I read a lot of articles, and that helps me understand the background of what's going on. And again, I don't follow it as detailed. To me, what I do understand is this. There's more listings that are coming to market. Those listings, to me, the majority of that market is a person looking to sell versus us as flippers, we have to sell. So the must sellers, right?
Yeah.
The people that are possibly in foreclosure, the people that are holding on to hard money rates that are either having to refinance out of it for long-term hold, and that market's really not there anymore.
Yeah.
We have to get out of a product. So you get rid of the noise, right? All those listings and people coming in the market, that to me is not the competition. It's the open door that's been sitting there already 6 months that's chunking down their listing by $40,000, $50,000. And you're going like, wow, they're aggressive.
Right.
And they've been sitting there on the market because they know they have to sell, right?
Right.
I think those guys are going to take a beating. And I get to listen to their capital calls and things like that. But to me, it's I think they're going to get hurt pretty bad. But the key is to be able to understand at that particular week where you need to be in the market to make sure that you're getting all the right buyers and you're capturing that person that's going to buy that property. I think the numbers are a little bit more concerning that people understand. You know, earlier in the year, everybody's talking about 7% appreciation, 10%, 15, 14 by Zillow, right?
Right.
Now I'm starting to actually see by the end of 2023, they're calling out a 5% appreciation. That's starting to make a little bit more sense. I think we're going to lose quite a bit of equity that we gained, but I don't see it necessarily as a bad thing. I think that's going to bring us back to some reality and affordability. The fact that a 6% rate is a really good rate.
it used to be standard, right?
I mean, hey, you know what? 6% is actually a pretty decent rate. 2% is unheard of. The 6% is still a recent rate. The issue is your pricing has gone just through the roof. But I do believe that you're going to see your end of the summer rush of the people that have to buy. And you're going to have a very interesting winter. And you're going to have a bunch of people that kind of chase the market down. This should have been a little bit more aggressive, and you're going to start seeing some bigger price reductions that you're seeing now. And you're already seeing some heavy 30%, I think was the last number. Actually, it was close to 39%. And this is, again, national data that I don't pay as much attention to, price reductions and things like that. So we're going to see something interesting. But on the flip side of it, right? Back to the point I was trying to make in regards to, you just got to buy right. If you're buying right and you understand that you're in a short-term market, you got to be in the market in 4 months. I'm 100% for buying properties right now because I believe as long as you're making those adjustments, you're going to be okay.
You think the hit was taken? You think the hit's been taken already in like the say April, May, June markets? So the values that are being addressed now, you're saying that they're more of a comp? Is that what you're saying? That they're more of a legitimate comp?
I would say your peak of the market was April. You're going to see May, June, and July start to depreciate. You're going to see a lot more price cuts. You're going to see a lot more listings. And again, that's to me the noise. That part to me is not as relevant because those people... A homeowner can come to market and not sell, and that's not going to change, right? For us, the people they have to sell, those are the people that you're going to see start kind of competing with each other, and that's what's going to start driving the market down. There's not enough buyers, in my opinion, for us to be able to absorb the inventory that's gonna be there. And even if you take away 50% of the people that we're gonna say they're just not gonna sell, you still have too much inventory for the people that can't afford it.
It's interesting. I heard today that the Feds were talking about raising the interest rates sooner rather than later. And an investor, I don't know how true it is, but just how we were talking about it today, was saying that the Feds would be raising it again as early as this month or next month, which, you know, those rate locks that people are doing on their loans, I happen to be in the lending business. So it was a couple of months ago, the banks were forced to make a decision when they were selling rates and locking the rates, that all of a sudden the rates went up, right? And they thought, well, do we honor these rate locks or do we let them go and lose a customer? Some of them did, some of them didn't. I think Sprout went a particular way that might have broken them for that particular reason. Other banks that I work with, they decided to honor the rate locks, and they would pay out of pocket like $8, $10, $12 million to wow. honor the rate locks, right? So I was talking to this investor today, and I was like, because he has a rate lock on a bunch of properties, right? And you think you're safe there, right? But if this bank paid $10 million last month, right, over the last rate hike, are they going to do that again this month, right? Because they rate locked you at 7%. It's a DSCR loan at 7.25%, right? And you got a rate lock. You feel safe. But this guy's going to come to a point where the interest rate raises up, and the owner of this bank's going to go like, do we honor this or do we go broke? Right, like we can't have both. They're gonna have to choose, and I think a lot of those rate locks that are on the market right now might not be good, right? So, it's a crazy time, huh? It's so weird, but what would you? Okay, so the guys that are investing now, right? So it's gonna be hard to comp, right? Because is it hard to comp? I mean, because you run a comp in the last 6 months, you're gonna get all this data. You throw April out, right? You get as close as you're talking about, like on the pendings, like you're getting a bird's eye view. I like that idea. Like you're comping pendings at this point just to find out what's going on last week, right? And then you're buying. So now you're in a declining market. You think it's a declining market? Yes. Is it short-term decline or is it a little longer-term decline, right? I think it might be a longer-term decline. So these investors are purchasing these properties, they're comping them on the pendings, and they're purchasing today. You said you like this market, so investors should still keep buying. Is that what you're saying?
So yeah, Joe, the option for investors to continue to buy is, just got to really know your product. You got to stay away from anything that's got obsolescence. Where before we're picking up stuff on busy streets and we're doing well, now it's got absolutely no obsolescence, no heavy rehabs. We're doing a bunch of ADUs. We stopped doing those. And we're just getting in and out as fast as we can. And you know what? There's just, if it doesn't fit, I'm not pushing anything. I let a property go over $3,000 and
wow.
Yeah, and it wasn't the gap. Is just I was already pushing both on the rehab and on the price, and there's no question I would have got it 2 months ago. I just don't know what's going to be 2 months from now. Yeah, and right. If you would ask me 2 months ago, even though I kind of felt that the market was going to change a little bit more than they're letting us to believe or what the data was showing, I think we're going to continue to see those changes. But as long as you're buying with those adjustments in mind and you're staying away from anything difficult, I think it's still an opportunity. And that opportunity comes from the market educating the sellers.
The market educating the sellers. Okay, I got it.
Yep, because for us, when I have a property in the market, and I'm not getting what I want and it's taking too long. That's my education, right? Forget the article, forget what Zillow is saying and all this forecast people. When I have no offers and I'm sitting there, that's my reality. So when you start looking at it from that perspective, the guys that are doing enough business that I'm friends with, I'm calling them and they're saying, hey, you know, it just feels right. Like, you know, July of 2018, the faucet turned off. Eventually we were able to get out of things. You just got to be strategic. I think you just got to also be able to cut your losses, move out of the product that you purchased at the previous market, and then just refocus again and purchase at this new market, and you'll be just fine.
And it's interesting. It's like that's one of the hangups on investors, right? Like we buy a property, we start fixing and flipping it, and then we get emotionally attached to this particular product of ours. Mm-hmm. And we're gonna get this number, and yep. You know, we're the greatest property on the market, and blah blah blah, and we get all wrapped up into it, and that affects the way that our exit's gonna be, and it can't really affect our exit in a market that's changing so quickly. We have to like detach ourselves from this. You know, it's not our home; it's just a product that we're buying and selling.
Yep. You know, it's interesting to that point of disattaching yourself from your wants and needs to going out there. So I happen to buy two properties in the same city here in Rancho Cucamonga. Identical floor plan, same builder, same bed bath. One had a little bit of location. The one that went to the market first, we went to the market with what we call the best value pricing model, $698,900. That was the best deal on the market. Zillow was telling me we had a 98% chance of selling right away. All the elements was there, right? So I'm like, this thing's gonna fly.
Yeah.
We get a first offer, I counter him back to $715,000, which was my target price. They didn't even respond. Another week goes by. Get an offer, we counter him back, they accept it, they canceled the next day. Third week, $705,000. We push them up $5,000. We go to escrow. We close the transaction. Right about a week before we close, I put this other property in the market. I figured, hey, same price. The information was telling me the same. I sat in the market for almost 4 weeks, and I sold it for $695,000.
Still better than I thought you were going to do. But yeah, that's low, right? Like what, 15,000 or something lower?
Yeah. Like a 10 grand move, right? But what's interesting is you look at my that $10,000 difference. What to me was interesting is that one of my flipper friends had one up the street and he sold it in March and got $750,000.
Yeah.
As his comp, April, $715,000. So I'm thinking I'm out the door $715,000 all day long. Mm-hmm. So if I'm depreciating at a $10,000 a month, which I don't think that's the case, but you're going to start seeing those adjustments and you got to really understand what the ultimate, your own particular challenges for that market based on what's available. And then start looking at the price cuts. And like I was saying, ultimately looking at the, so I got visitors over here.
Hey, those are pretty little visitors. She's adorable. Yeah, that's, you know, so there's what you want to tell the investors that are listening right now. Like, look, detach yourself from the scenario. Get all your hopes and dreams out of this deal. The market has completely changed. Now's the time to, you know, get rid of the product, turn it back into cash, pay off your debt, live to fight another day, right? Take what the market's allowing you. If you could get out of there with your money and some profit, then that's fine. You don't have to hit your 12% ROI on this. Just get out of it before you get hurt.
Exactly. And you know what's interesting? I think you're also going to get back to your normal 12% return on investment. Last year, we were at 18, which is crazy. We ended up, our previous years prior to the market going crazy, we were averaging 13%, and those are good returns, right? It's good money. They're clean properties. We're averaging about 128 days in and out. So the yield was really nice. And to be honest with you, Joe, I'd rather that market.
Yeah.
That just a little bit more comfortable for us. The sellers are not as difficult. There's less competition across the board, and you have a little bit more predictable outcomes. And don't get me wrong, it was nice to go out and take advantage of that opportunity, but it got us to the point now we're going to probably give some of that return back to get out of some product and then just start again. But
well, that's good advice for the investors. Let's switch, because you and I have both been brokers, right, for a long time. We both listed a lot of properties. I wanted to talk about the real estate agents. You know, there's hundreds of thousands of real estate agents. They are changing. They're seeing this changing market also, right? And you know, when we were talking about that, I think, you know, one of the things that realtors do is they want to bring the most value that they can to their client, right? To the homeowner. I can get you this amount of money, confident in it. This is what the market's doing. Is it time for the realtors to change their position when they're talking to homeowners in regards to listings? Like, look, the market has changed, right? Like, do they address that, do you think? I think they address that right up front. The market's changed. I'm not going to promise you this number. Here's what I think is a more reasonable number, right? And start setting an expectation to, you know, because, you know, the market has changed, right? Is it time for the realtors to start doing their part in setting the expectations for their sellers?
Absolutely, Joe. I think that piece is already past us with the first of the year as the information was coming out. I think it was a little bit too optimistic across the board, and we saw that drastically change. The fact is that the agents, if you're doing any business, you know, your showings have gone way, way down. Your offers are way, way down, right? So from that perspective, anybody that does enough business has already been impacted by the change and is able to bring that information to the sellers. What I think, and I was talking about the inventory that we're going to start seeing as the people that feel they're going to be losing the market or they're trying to catch the peak of the market, I think those people are going to create a lot of noise. They're going to bring a lot of misinformation to the market by putting more homes that don't need to be sold. You're going to see some of those people chase the market. But I think the real market that we're going to be dealing with, if you get past all those people, are, like I said, the people that might be in financial problems because they lost their job, right?
Yeah.
You're talking about how many mortgage lenders are being laid off. You know, it's a tough market. We're tying our belts all across and making sure that we're prepping ourselves. So you will have those people that have to sell. And I don't think the agent is going to have to really do a lot of convincing to make them realize that the market is changing. I think they're feeling it firsthand. And it's going to put a little bit of fear with this that's going to drive their decisions. And that's going to be the real market that we're going to be looking at. And that's what, to me, is what I study the closest is those people that are moving, those people that are going pending. The actives, to me, are just noise at this point.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, 100%. You know, our realtor friends are out there. They're working hard. And, you know, you don't want to. I want them to be aware that, you know, you're listing it for this amount right now. And, you know, in 3 months from now, you know, you might not get that number.
You know, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
You promised your seller you were going to get them 600,000 in 3 months from now. You know, they're going to be at a 550. You know, so I think setting expectations right now from the realtor's point of views, which is then going to change our comps, right? That's also going to change our values on the way out of here too, right? For all investors, for everybody, when the realtors start adjusting that sales price and those numbers start to go down in the next, I've heard chatter of like September, October, you know, that year over end type numbers that come out. But we had a dip in the last September, right? I think it was September, October, something like that.
And, yeah, we had a interesting May last year. We had a dip, And then this year we had a dip. So I was trying to see if there's correlation. And I think it's just more of a drop. We had an actually pretty high winter last year, surprisingly high, of sales and price appreciations. But I think a lot of the data is not really connected to your cyclical and your typical growth and market changes. I think you just had a market that was just, you know, people jumping over each other to buy those properties. And I think that just took all those, the basics out of the market. I think you're going to go back to a more realistic, basic market. I think we're, you know, they're talking about the inventory, months of inventory. I think those numbers are off, if you ask me, in the sense that, again, you start looking at the listings and the buyers, there's less buyers than people think. And that's where I see the data and the offers. I mean, how can it be that I'm sitting on a property where I am very certain that I'm the best deal in the market and I'm getting one and two showings a week?
Yeah.
It just, if I'm getting that, I know the guy that's overlisted by 15,000, there's no way he's getting any showings. Or there's, if they're going to make an offer, I have the best chance of getting out of that market than anybody else.
Yeah.
So if I'm seeing that, and I believe that I'm doing everything that I can to move, the rest of the market has to be even worse. So those are the things that we have to look at. Now, if I was to take the same perspective and take my price down another 15 to 20 grand, I would sell that property maybe not in 30 days, in 2 weeks. And that's the difference where I need to adjust on my next purchase. So if I was to look at it for the exact same product that I bought here in Rancho, I paid $515 for one and $525 for another. The $515, I would pay right now for the same property about $490. And it's not that big of a difference. That would give me enough absorption to still get in the market, come back and not expect the $589 that I got or the $594 that I got, but get, you know, $585 and still make my return and get out of the property. And I know that would give me enough margin for it to make it worth it.
Yeah. And you know, that's, so all of this is a direct result of those interest rates being hiked up the way that they are, right? Affordability. And so if the feds were to raise it again, I think you're going to see a real big shock into the capital markets, right? These banks that are, you know, with these rate locks. And then that's going to put even more downward pressure, I think, on the real estate values in the next 6 months. You agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it just, it comes down to, you know, you got your two different sets of buyers that we're personally dealing with, right? We have the sub under million buyer that it's worried about his gas, and it's worried about his utilities and it's groceries, right? And the guy's sitting there saying, well, you know, I can only pay $2,500 a month. He doesn't care about the purchase price. He cares about that monthly payment, right? Right. Where before it would take him $300 to go back and forth to work. Now it's taking him $500, and that has to come from somewhere. And it's probably that mortgage payment.
Right.
You know, when you start seeing that pressure across the board, we're seeing again on our own properties that people are being forced, or they're not able to even purchase the property, even if they wanted to. Then you take it to the other side, right? You take, you know, some of my friends that have a little bit different opinion than I do in regards to what's going to happen to the market. They're saying that the high end is not going to get hurt as much. I believe that the higher end has more of a strategic issue than affordability issue, right? Is the guy that owns the company that has the people that he has to lay off, right? And maybe it's not a problem for him to pay $200 more gas a month because he's buying a $2.5 million house. Yeah. But he's now looking at it and saying, I'm just going to wait because I can probably buy the house for $500,000 less. And I think that's the type of pressure.
I think you're right. That's the type of thinking that those cats have, right? Those business guys. And not only that, but like, you know, those guys that own the business, they have overhead. They got employees working. They got to keep everybody going, right? So then when you start seeing things go down, you might be making money, but you still puts a little cold shiver down your spine where you're like, wait, I could get caught up in this too.
Right? Yeah.
I better be careful here. Let's not go on the trips. Let's not go buy this. Let's hold off and see what happens in the next 6 months. They make those types of decisions, right? And so, yeah, it's definitely two different types of buyers, right? So, okay, so we talked about the realtors. We talked about the investors and the markets. I know it's early, but at what point, you know, I met a guy out there in New Jersey, and good guy. He is, he's been doing short sales this whole time. He just does short sales. That's what him and his crew do. They've been doing short sales this whole time. He's making good money. He's been doing well. My question to you is, do you think that his business will rise up even more in the next 6 months or 12 months? Or do you see any of that type of stuff coming back in the near term?
We're seeing the data. Like I said, I listen to a bunch of guys that are out there that have really good information. You know, they're trying to generalize. There's a few guys that give you a little bit more market specific data. But at the end of the day, the fact is that there is a lot of financial pain that we're all having to deal with. And there's people that they're just, you know, one water heater away from not being able to afford their mortgage payment. And I stole that out of a guy that I was listening to earlier. And I think that's 100% right.
Yeah, no, 100%.
And, you know, those are the type of people that are going to get in trouble. And, you know, depending if they bought a year ago, they got 20% appreciation almost in a year. I believe those people are going to be able to get out of it without getting hurt. I don't think you're going to have a massive amount of people losing their homes to foreclosure. There's enough equity for people to bail out before they get financially hurt to the point that they're out of the market. Your rents are so expensive that some people will do whatever it takes to keep their mortgage, especially if they have a 2.5 or 3% rate. So all those variables start becoming very important. What I don't believe is that the issue is going to become a real estate first issue. I don't think the bubble like last time or the first domino was the real estate in 06, right? In this case, I think it's going to come from somewhere else. I think that the lack of inventory, the lack that you still have some, you know, unemployment's very low, and all those things that are important variables to consider are going to continue to hold people's ability to maintain their mortgages. I think it's going to come from somewhere else. And I just don't know enough about the stock market. And, you know, you got a bunch of people that got their beat up on crypto and things like that. But I think that's not a big enough issue on the crypto side to really crash the market. I think there's going to be something more interesting than that. The other thing I've been hearing, which makes sense, and we lived it back in 2018, you know, you're hearing the feds talk about they're willing to go into a recession to stop inflation, right?
Right.
And I don't get it because I'm obviously very biased to my own perspective, but they're going to do it, right? And they're going to do it. And you're already seen it just bringing this massive rate hikes that are, to me, destroying the economy. But what's going to happen after they get to the point to where this stalls, like it did, they have to lower the rates. What's going to happen when we get into next year and elections become more important? You know, they're going to have to bring down gas. They're going to have to bring down rates, restart the economy a little bit. And I think you're going to see a little bit of movement moving forward. Again, this is just my opinion and maybe more hope than opinion that they'll just beat us up enough and make the adjustments. But it just seems to me that that's going to be something they're going to have to do in order for this to have some traction, because they can't just destroy the real estate market. There's too much tied to it, that it will start crumbling other things. But again, well, just
back in the day, so in the last crash, like, you did really, really well on when the market was sliding down, right? I mean, you did.
Yeah, but it was one of those things, right? We all got ran over, and I was just able to be one of the lucky ones that got up. So, not without a good beating, right? So,
not without a thorough beating, right?
Yeah, so, we did. We did very well with it.
From that perspective, like, okay, what I'm getting at on that is that, like, you've had experience in a whole market, right? From there to here, it seems like it's almost a complete circle around the globe. Like, that's a complete market, right? So in a market like this, right, where do you see the opportunity for, you know, real estate professionals, whether they be realtors and or investors, or do you see an opportunity quite yet?
Oh absolutely, Joe. So, you know, you become confident through your experiences, right? It's fear is lack of knowledge, right? When you don't know what's going to happen, you know, I've been around it. This being my fourth downturn, you start understanding the patterns, right? And we kind of watched our leverage, where before we were just way too leveraged, where we couldn't afford things to change. There's going to be some pain points for us moving down the road, but I think the opportunity and what we've been doing right now is really focusing on fine tuning who we are as an operation, tying up and making us as lean as possible, getting rid of the people that we don't believe they're going to be able to continue to move us forward. So this is a great opportunity for everybody that is going to push through, that has the passion, because you need it to go through the headaches and the pain point. But once you get past it, and if you're strategically connected to either the capital, the buyers, this is where you start picking up that phone and you start making the connections. If you're a realtor, you can connect with the investors. If you're an investor, you can connect with the realtors, right? And start building your network. And this is what this business is all about to me, is having the right connections, knowing the right people. And at the end of the day, your knowledge only takes you so far as those connections that really take you to the next level. So I would say that's what we're doing right now, is getting ready and prepping ourselves to, once there's some direction and some consistency, for us to heavily reinvest again, because we know this game, right? It's going to come down, then it's eventually is going to go up. We know that if, you know, the houses that we buy in the next 2-3 years, in 10 to 15 years, are going to at least double.
Yeah.
And now we're able to start looking at cash flowing some California properties by adding ADUs and things like that, where right now they're just not going to happen, right? So those opportunities are fantastic. So to me, this is hopefully my last big push. I do want to start buying quite a few rentals.
I agree.
Because I'll tell you, I know a lot of people, including my brother-in-law and my sister, they do what I do. They do it in a lot smaller scale, but they've been buying and holding things that I would have never even touched. They would pick up properties out in 29 Palms in 2009 and 10 for $30,000 for a little 2-1. And I'm like, why are you bothering?
Yeah, why do you want that thing?
Yeah, and guess what? It's worth $300,000 now. So, and you know, they held enough where they're all over the place, they're traveling the world, and they don't have to flip, right? They're sitting there pretty. While, you know, I judge them on their decision, now I'm learning from their discipline of the buy and hold, right? Because it's always a lot nicer to look at and say, I can pull $50,000 out of this thing and go buy two more, and eventually it's going to give us more. But somehow, some way, we always end up spending that money. Where when you're buying the whole product, that's where it seems to create the long-term wealth.
Dude, I agree so much. You know how many smoking deals I gave up for $35,000? You know what I mean? You could have the $200,000 in the future. Give me my $30,000 right now today. I want the grant. I want the money now. And you know, it's like if you just had like a quarter of those smoking deals.
Oh yeah.
Purchased them and held on to them. You know, back in 2012, I remember in like Compton, South Central, I went to a friend of mine who's a movie producer. I was like, you know, why don't you raise $20 million? And I'm buying duplexes for $185,000, $225,000. Like, it's smoking deals in LA. He's like, oh, you know, we never got it done. But I was thinking, you know, we'll rent all the way through. And him and I chatted. We had lunch the other day, and he goes, you know, remember when you told me that back in 2012? I was like, yeah. He goes, I thought you were crazy. I go, yeah. He goes, but if we would have done that, we would have tripled that. We would have tripled that money. And made money the whole way through.
Exactly.
And I was like, yep. And all the deals that I ended up doing, they're just memories now. They're in a folder in a dresser somewhere. Exactly. You know what I mean? They don't even exist. So yeah, the buy hold, I think at this time, you know, like in this next correction, you know, and listen, the rents are crazy right now.
Yeah.
Bro, I got a buddy of mine that went to go rent. He had to get out of his house quick. You know how that works out. He had to get out quick. And he had to go rent a spot. He rented a one bedroom, right, for $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I go, hey, so you rented that room? It's not that nice of a house. What are you paying? Like, you know, $800 for that room? He's like, $1,500. I go, $1,500? Did you rent the whole house? He's like, no, just one bedroom.
I'm like, oh, that's crazy.
Bath. He's like, no, I don't even have a bath. I was like, what? He's like, and then that lady rents it to two different people. So there's two. She Airbnbs those two rooms for $1,500 a pop. I was like,
wow. No, it's nuts. And it's, I don't think it's going to get better. I think inflation is here to stay for a while.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things, I was doing a little bit of research and my brother really goes down the rabbit hole when it comes down to, you know, the government and, you know, this and that. He always sends me some really good articles. And it's kind of, you know, I've got to read between the lines to get the your own perspective out of it, right? Because it does get a little funky. But he was telling me they printed 80% of money that's ever been in circulation in the last 2 years. So if you look at it from that perspective, you have to have inflation. And the fact that you sit there and you have the rate, you know, obviously the government's now blaming it on Russia and everything else. But, you know, at the end of the day, that money, it's going to adjust. The fact that all the other countries printed money, it's going to keep the dollar balance, in my opinion, with where it is. But ultimately, I don't think we're ever going to see things come back to normal just for that sheer fact that there's so much money that's been printed. And I mean, you see that where the people that have a bunch of money, they don't even know how to spend it. And then, you know, we got the rest of us that we're having to sit there and like run the credit card twice to fill the freaking car because it's tapping you out $150, like $300 for my truck. It's a joke.
Hey, well, like, you know what, bro? I got a Tesla. So I'm not really sure about those types of problems. I would have never bought one, but my niece, she went to Italy and she, you know, she's like, can you take over the lease on my Tesla? I was like, I don't really see. Do I have to get a man bun? Do I have to like grow my hair out and get a man bun? And
of course.
Let me tell you something. I love that car. I love that car. And that's awesome. I really love it when I'm driving by and it says $6.50 for a gallon of gas.
Or even better, right?
Or even better. Yeah. So you know what, man? I've always appreciated you. I think you're a great investor. I know that, you know, we have a mutual friend who I respect also. And I talked to you and you had said you got off all of your stuff and you're kind of waiting for the market to kind of calm down. And then I talked to him and he had like, I think 20 something properties, right? And he's like, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, I would have rather been in Tony's position getting off this stuff, right? And then being like, let's hope it's okay. But, you know, he's a seasoned investor. He's been through a few of them himself, and hopefully he's going to be fine in what he does too. And, but, you know, I don't want to leave the viewers with the doom and gloom. There's a lot of money to be made in real estate in every single market, right? Every single market has a ton of ways to make money. You just gonna have to remember that stupid book, Who Moved My Cheese or Who Moved the Cheese?
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Where's the cheese, right?
Where's the cheese? It's a stupid little book, but it really makes a lot of sense. If the market's gonna change, so do we. We gotta change with it, right? And whatever our strategies are, you know, you could hear this, but if we're gonna keep doing the same thing over again, we're gonna keep getting the same result. And so I definitely have been raising more capital, talking to guys in capital markets. They're a disaster in the capital markets, like that money all froze up. And so I'm raising more capital for fix and flip and some buy and holds. I like your idea about the buy and holds. I think that's a smart play. And the long run, your sister and brother-in-law did wonderful. And anyway.
You're going to see there's a lot of money on the sidelines for that buy and hold. So what's interesting is the key is still going to be the ability to acquire in a retail approach, because I don't think you're going to have the ability to go to a bank and pick up, you know, $1 billion worth of properties like you did before. So as you're bringing that point up, being able to be in the right position where you can source those opportunities, these people will pay retail. And I remember back in the day when they were purchasing properties through the auction, I would laugh at them. I'm like, you guys are paying way past retail, right? Back in 11 and 12. And then, you know, I was the smart one back there, right? Paying and selling it and making 20, 30 grand a pop. They were sitting on their properties that they overpaid. 10 years later, those houses are worth 5 times more than they paid. And you're like, wow. But the point is if you have the ability to surround yourself with the people that have the capital for the buy and hold, that to me is probably one of the biggest opportunities you have if you're able to source opportunities or properties for those types of investors. Is going to be huge. Or if you can become part of it, even better.
Well, hopefully you and I will be doing some, well, of course we're going to be doing some more business in the future, and I am raising the capital for that type of endeavor, and we'll be doing some more. So I appreciate you coming on, dude. Like you've been around a long time. You're an honest guy. You're straight up. You've made some great moves, and I know that you've taken it on the chin yourself a few times. So I've always liked a weathered investor, somebody who, you know what I mean? Sure. They got a couple scars, and they go real deep from the soul down to the heart. You know, they're deep, but you know, it makes you a smarter investor. And
right.
That's one of the reasons why you were able to position yourself on this thing where it caught a lot of people off guard. And in fact, you know, really quick, that bank that I was telling you about that I'm working with that had to buy that $8 million out, those cats are all 33 years old. They're doing like $400 million a month in DSCR loans. And I was thinking to myself, 34, back in 2006, what were you, 18? Or something?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So did they see that market? They never saw that market, right? So they're kind of running blind. But anyway, with that, Tony, thank you for coming on. I do appreciate it. And with that, everybody, Tony, you want to give me your contact and what you could, and how you could work with people out there, realtors?
Yeah, absolutely. So as we're saying, we're still purchasing, right? So investsocal.com, investsocal.com. That's our buy, fix, and sell platform. Last time I was here with you, Joe, we talked about the marketplace that we're putting together. We're extremely excited. I'll let you guys find out about it, but definitely take a minute to go in. It's Fair Close, FAIRclose.com. And it's a way for you as an agent to connect to vetted investors, and doubling your listings is a way for investors who are looking for inventory and also to find off-market opportunities, and for wholesalers to connect to realtors and buyers in a way that's done through transparency and trust. I think our business has the opportunities grow. We get some sub opportunities like wholesaling and things like that. They become sometimes looked down upon, and we use technology and data to be able to create what we believe that's the most important thing that we were talking about earlier, which is relationships through trust. and being able to do it in a way that the agent doesn't feel like it's been is being lied to by a wholesaler, and everybody gets to participate and do it in a way that is beneficial for everybody. So fairclose.com, check it out, sign up. It's free. We don't charge anything to sign up. And it serves everybody in the community, and we're looking for feedback, and we're super excited. I think we're going to be able to actually change the market the way that's done. And we have a support of some big names that we've been able to bring the opportunity to, that are supporting the cost and they see the value. And we just wanted to make sure we're doing it in a way that is not a membership base, so you don't have to pay for anything. It's only success based, and it's a very, very small amount that we charge. And our goal is to bring this community and marketplace so we can all transact and do it in a way that's beneficial for everybody. So we're super excited about it. So thank you for allowing me to plug that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Anybody that's listening to the podcast, realtors, investors, go to Fair Close, go to Tony Stuff. I could testify he's a good guy. He's honest, he's straightforward, and he's not a greedy investor. He's a good dude. And yeah, check out fairclose.com and Tony Diaz. Thanks, Tony.
Joe, always a pleasure, brother. Thank you so much for having me. I always have a good time.
Thank you, brother. All right, bye.